Good morning, church. Good morning. It's so good to be with you this morning. If we have not had the opportunity to meet yet, my name is Andrea, and I'm the praise pastor here at Mountain View, and we just want to say we're glad you're here. We believe that God has something for you, whether you're with us in person or online. And so today, we're going to finish out our series on lament. But before we get there, today's a special day, and it's Father's Day. And so I have a little bit of something before we get to all like the hard stuff. So Father's Day can be a complicated holiday. Maybe you have a strange relationship with your father. Maybe your father has died and you're missing him today. But for all of us, we just want to say that whether you're a father or a stepfather, an adopted father, or a foster father, or just a man who stepped up in someone's life, we love you, we appreciate you, and today we celebrate you. And so thank you to all the fathers in our lives. We can clap for them. Yay! Yeah. All right, now I'm going to ask you to stand as we read Psalm 42 together. Bev, can we get the pad on? Perfect. So today we read Psalm 42 together. Psalm 42 says, "As the deer longs for streams of water, so I long for you, O God. I thirst for God, the living God. When can I go and stand before him? Day and night, I only have tears for food, while my enemies continually taunt me, saying, 'Where is this God of yours?' My heart is breaking as I remember how it used to be. I walked among the crowds of worshipers, leading a great procession to the house of God, singing for joy and giving thanks amid the sound of great celebration. So why am I discouraged? Why is my heart so sad? I will put my hope in God. I will praise him again, my Savior and my God. I am deeply discouraged, but I will remember you. I hear the tumult of the raging waves, and the seas and surging tides sweep over me. But each day the Lord pours his unfailing love upon me, and through each night I sing his songs, praying to God who gives me life. So why am I discouraged? Why is my heart so sad? I will put my hope in God, and I will praise him again, my Savior and my God." And so as we were preparing for today, I was reminded that there's a song that's literally this psalm. And so I was wondering if we could all sing that together this morning.
As the deer pants for the water, so my soul longs after you. You alone are my heart's desire, and I long to worship you. And you alone are my strength, my shield. To you alone may my spirit yield. You alone are my heart's desire, and I long to worship you. Great is thy faithfulness, O God, my Father. There is no shadow of turning with thee. Thou changest not thy compassions, they fail not. As thou hast been, thou forever wilt be. Great is thy faithfulness, great is thy faithfulness, morning by morning. All I have needed, thy hand hath
who you are. It's who you are. It's who you are. It's who you are. And I'm loved by you. It's who I am. It's who I am. It's who I am. You are perfect in all of your ways. You are perfect in all of your ways. You are perfect in all of your ways to us.
One more time, let's declare this. He's perfect.
You are perfect in all of your ways. You are perfect in all of your ways. You are perfect in all of your ways to
Very good. Have a seat. We have been spent the last month here, for some of us, learning a fresh way to communicate with that good Father that you've been talking about. Has anybody learned a fresh new way to communicate with God as we've been through our Lament series in the last month? So last one today. So if you're new, you're getting to hear the last. And if you enjoy it, there are three that you can go back to and listen to and catch up. But I am glad you're here with us on this Father's Day, whether you're in the room or online with us, to share before the festivities of the day, if that is in queue for you, before they begin for us. While we're here, we are on the verge of Vacation Bible School. One of the ways I know that is because every day Amazon shows up multiple times. Because you have been faithful to go shopping with us. And so we're getting down to the wire. So if you wanted to go shopping, there are a few things less. And so you can click on that QR code up behind me and go do a little bit of shopping and be part of the streaming packages that come in from Amazon. Literally, I'm not kidding, every day. But it's good. Pretty soon, decorations are going to start going up and all kinds of things. And so if you have wanted to join us and be a part of the team, whether it's in decorations or cleanup or actually being here during the week, you can sign up up there as well. You can go out at the table and do that. And then, man, the last thing, keep your eyes open for kids that are a part of your life, whether they're neighborhood kids down the street or next door or grandchildren or nieces or nephews or in a friendship, and invite them to join us for that week. And you know what? For some of them, maybe change the course of their life as they meet Jesus. And we expect for that to happen during that week. And so, man, just be praying for us. Pray for our team, that they exhibit Jesus during the week. Pray for the kids, that they hear clearly a message of God's love for them. And pray that families make connection and a place to call their church home over the course of Vacation Bible School. And then school is out, and camps are on the way, but Jay's still planning some things. So they had a barbecue. The next thing up they've got is an ice cream. There it is, ice cream social. The 24th of June from 6 to 8. And so if you've got high school kids, middle school kids in your life, they are still meeting from time to time on Wednesdays. There's a whole calendar you can find out in the foyer. You can go onto the website if you're online with us and find what the Wednesday activities are over the course of summer with our students. And then finally, if you're here and you have never filled out in the room that tall red card, if you're online and you've never gone to the website and scrolled down on the front page and found the red card, I would love to know that you're here. And that's the only way we know that. Some of you have been here for just a few weeks. Some of you have been here quite a while, and we don't have any information on you. You're like, yeah, I know. We want your experience here at Mountain View to be more than just about being here on Sunday mornings. And the only way that we can do that is if we make a connection. So if you're in the room, man, I'd really love it if you'd fill out that card today, and I'll be at the Next Steps table and say hello. And there's a couple of, there's a giving card and there's a prayer card. Man, if you want to engage with those, we'd encourage you to do that. Thanks.
Well, you all are awake today. Wow. I always like it when first service is with me. Second service, you don't dare say good morning because you can't get them back in. You guys are, I really appreciate you. I do. Anyway, good morning. And happy Father's Day to the fathers in the room, for sure, for sure. Man, for years, I didn't like Father's Day because of my father experience, right? How many of you know what I'm talking about? Not so pleasant, fond memories, right? And then I got to encounter church, and got to be with people at church, and man, Father's Day was a great day, and I was always kind of grumpy and resentful. And then you have your own kids, and you're like, okay, now it changes some of the meaning a little bit, and now I begin to understand. And so I am glad to be with you today. And I, unfortunately, we're still lamenting on Father's Day, so maybe, as Bob reminded me, maybe you're trying to tell us something, right? And so we are in this series, we've been in this series 4 weeks, where we've asked the question, several questions, but really the title of the series is Maybe This Is Too Honest. And so 4 weeks ago, we started with the most basic question, and the most basic question was this: can I actually say this to God? Can I actually say this to God? And we established from Hebrews, the answer is yes, because God already knows all that's going on anyway. And the throne of grace that we get to approach it with confidence. And honest prayer is not a weakness. Actually, honest prayer is worship. And we can read through the Psalms and some of the prophets and see that very true, very real, it's a reality that it's a worship time. And so week two, we began to ask, God, where are you in the middle of the silence? Because sometimes God is just silence. We looked at this guy named Habakkuk, and he showed us that God's silence is not absence. And bringing our confusion directly to God, again, to the throne room of grace, planting ourselves on the watchtower and refusing to walk away is actually one of the most courageous acts of faith there is. And then last Sunday, if you remember, we looked at these three men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who were standing in front of a furnace, and they declared, but even if he does not, and we were reminded that surrender is not defeat. Surrender is not defeat. It's the most honest and faithful thing that we can do when we cannot control something. It just is. And so today, which is our final week, I know some of you have been waiting for this week particularly. Believe it or not, some people in the room have not been dealing with a single hard moment. Can you believe that? As a matter of fact, they've been dealing with a long, hard season, not just a moment. It doesn't seem to go away. And the question you've been living with inside of your soul, maybe in this conversation, can I say this or is this too honest? Maybe the question you're trying to ask is, how long? How long? How long? How long does this waiting have to last? And how long is this grief going to stay? And how long do we have to keep doing this before something actually changes? How long, O Lord? And the question is actually all over the Bible. It's in the Psalms and it's in the prophets. It's in the mouths of people who loved God deeply but suffered long. And today we're going to sit with it honestly, not to answer it, because I don't know that we can actually answer these questions sometimes. I think what we're going to try to do is we're trying to learn what to do with it. And what I need us to know is this. Honest prayer is not a single moment. It's not a single moment. It's actually a practice that's built over a lifetime. Somebody last week, actually Elaine Flum, right over here, brilliant thinking over there, and she says to me, she says, hey, we need to dig a little bit more into some of these characters. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego had some failures before, and they had some other difficult things before. And I said, absolutely, we're going to talk about this next week, because she's absolutely right. For a moment, let's think back to every person we've looked at in the series. For just a moment, I think we need to see something that's easy to miss when we read these great moments of faith, these great moments of declaration. If you think back to David in Psalm chapter 13, Job in the middle of his suffering, or Habakkuk as he's sitting on the watchtower, or Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego when they're standing before this fiery furnace, we read these defining moments, and they are defining moments, and yet we need to stop and we need to actually consider that these moments didn't come from nowhere. They didn't just appear. They had been built over a lifetime. I don't think any of us gets to "but even if" without a long history of honest, unedited prayer before we actually get to those moments. It's a practice. It's a lifetime. David didn't arrive at raw, unedited lament in Psalm chapter 13 because it was his natural personality. You got to think about David. David was a worshiper from his youth. He had been bringing his real self to God out in the field with a flock while he was a shepherd. He was bringing his real self to God when he was in the caves hiding from King Saul, who wanted to kill him, or in the palace and in the wilderness. And every moment in between, David was practicing bringing his whole self. And so by the time we read Psalm 13, David had been practicing honest prayer for years. The lament just didn't come from nowhere. It came from a lifetime of showing up again and again and again and again. You think of Job's friends who assumed that his sin was the result of some hidden sin or some issue. And God actually called Job blameless. The man who cursed the day he was born was the same man long before the suffering began who consistently brought his real life before God and said, "God, here it is. You can have whatever you want to do with it." And so the integrity that showed up in the crisis was the integrity that he had been building in the ordinary all along. Or you think Habakkuk. He didn't climb the watchtower because he suddenly decided to be bold with God one afternoon. No. Think of the audacity of his prayer. "I'm going to wait right here until you answer me, God." Ooh. I mean, that's an intense, honest prayer. But this was the posture of a man who had been in an ongoing, consistent, honest conversation long before chapter 1 ever shows up. The boldness was practiced. The boldness wasn't spontaneous. Or you think of Shadrach and Meshach and Abednego, three young men who were taken from their home country into exile, who refused to eat the king's food, who had been choosing faithfulness in the very small, daily, unglamorous decisions over and over and over again, long before they were asked to choose and make a choice or go into the fiery furnace. And so the "even if" in Daniel 3 was the fruit of possibly 1,000, I don't know that, or just possibly, 1,000 smaller "even ifs" that nobody wrote down, that nobody recorded. See, these big moments of faith are usually an overflow of small, consistent, honest prayers that nobody saw, that nobody saw before. Which means what we're building in this series is not a technique for crisis moments. That's not what our objective is. That's not what we're trying to do. We're actually building a practice here. We're building a daily, ongoing, unedited conversation with God. And over time, and sometimes a long time, in the ordinary and very unremarkable, unnoticed moments, form us into the people who can stand when the furnace comes. Does that make sense? Like, we're building something. We're becoming people who can wait at the watchtower, who can wait long hours in the waiting and the silence, who can even say, "even if," when things that we want are not guaranteed. And I wish we could, but we cannot build that kind of posture in 4 weeks. We just can't do it. The psalmist and Jeremiah are not having isolated moments of crisis. That's what we're going to look at today. They are people who have been in honest conversation with God day after day after day, whether the answer comes or not. And so this is exactly what I think we're going to learn. And we're going to look at a psalm, and we're going to look at a writing from Jeremiah. If you remember, we worked on Jeremiah and worked through Jeremiah in the fall. We skipped over Lamentations, the book that's, you have to remember, Jeremiah was the weeping prophet. Everybody remember that? So he wrote this book of Lamentations. If you've ever read Lamentations, it's the weeping prophet. I mean, he's just writing and writing and writing. But they teach us, and I think they both teach us, that waiting and worship can exist at the same time. And we don't always do that really well. We tend to worship really well when things are going our way, right? We do. It's a lot easier, at least, right? Unless you've practiced and practiced and practiced and practiced. It's a lot easier. It's a lot easier. But what I think we're going to learn from Jeremiah, what we're going to learn from the psalmist today, is that waiting and worship can exist at the exact same time, no matter what. And so Psalm chapter 42. Andrea read this at the beginning, but let's read it again. Verse 1. As the deer pants for flowing streams, so pants my soul for you, O God. My soul thirsts for God, for the living God. When shall I come and appear before God? My tears have been my food day and night. Did you read that? My tears have been my food day and night. Well, they say to me all the day long, where is your God? These things I remember as I pour out my soul, how I would go with the throng and lead them in procession to the house of God with glad shouts and songs of praise, a multitude-keeping festival. And I don't know what the anguish here is for this psalmist, but you can read and you can clearly see that there is some genuine anguish going on here. Tears that supply him as his food. What's most cruel is that the people around him are asking him, where's your God? Where's your God? Why doesn't your God show up? Why isn't your God doing something about this? Come on. If your God's so loving, then why that diagnosis? And if your God's so loving, then why are people dying of cancer? Where is your God? I mean, the suffering is bad enough here. The suffering alongside the public questioning of God's existence is kind of a different level of deeper darkness. And so this psalmist is saying, I am eating my tears for food. I just weep and weep. And then he does something at the same time that's so incredibly beautiful. He remembers. He says, oh, I remember. He remembers what it felt like to worship freely. He remembered what it meant to lead a procession, to be surrounded by glad shouts and great songs. And this memory is now its own kind of grief, the ache of what was held up against the emptiness of what is. And he doesn't pretend that it doesn't hurt. This is what we've been talking about. Sometimes we think we got to bring our best to God, and there's truth in that. So we pretend and we clean things up so that we can bring it to God. And what we're learning here in this series is that we've got to name it. He doesn't pretend he doesn't hurt. He's saying he's hurting. He names it. He pours it out. Look at verse 5. Why are you cast down, O my soul? And why are you in turmoil within me? Hope in God, for I shall again praise him, my salvation and my God. And I love this because you get the turn. He kind of talks to himself. He's like, who cares what everybody else is saying? Man, I'm mourning and this hurts and this is painful. But he talks to himself and he preaches to his own despair. And sometimes nobody else is going to help you. You're going to have to take yourself, maybe look in the mirror and have a real conversation. And that's what he does. And he says, why, looking in the mirror maybe, why are you so downcast? This is not denial. He's not telling himself that the pain isn't real. He's choosing in the middle of his pain to redirect towards something true, and what's true, to reach for hope while it's still feeling the weight of sorrow. I bet you that you can remember these moments when you've been overwhelmed with sorrow where you had to reach out for some kind of hope. These are defining moments. Do you remember? Do you remember once just being overwhelmed with pain and sadness and sorrow and grief, and it took everything in you just to kind of figuratively or literally reach out your hands and search for some kind of hope? You remember these moments. And the psalmist here is remembering this moment. And what's important to notice, I think, is the pattern Psalm 42 repeats. The lament comes back. It comes back. The refrain, it comes back. He doesn't get hope and then stay put. He cycles through lament, reframing, lament, reframing, lament, reframing. How many of you feel like your grief is kind of like that? I do. I think sometimes we think, well, you go to grief share and you're good to go. No. Years after something tragic, years after a loss, sometimes decades after, you'll be at the stoplight and some song will come on the radio and bam, grief, lament, sorrow all over again. And you're thinking, and I know what I think most of us do. I think what most of us do is we start talking to ourselves about, you should be over this, get a grip, like pull up the bootstraps, come on. The psalmist doesn't do that. He goes from despair, lament, hope, despair, lament, hope, despair, lament, hope, again and again and again and again and again. I guess it's okay if you do too. And if I do too. And so the preaching to himself, it comes back, it returns, and the cycle is one of the most honest things, I think, in the whole psalm. Most of us don't move from lament to hope in a straight line. Most of us cycle. Now, if you're somebody who can get to hope from lament in a straight line, bless you. Most of us have to cycle. Most of us go through it. And what I want you to hear is that's not failure. It's not failure. It doesn't mean you don't have faith. It's not faithlessness. It's actually faithfulness. And people say, I hear it, oh, I'm so sorry, I'm so sorry. I should be over this by now. Says who? Who said that? Who said that deep loss doesn't keep coming back and hurting more again later? Who said that? I think it's actually okay to let people know, hey, I'm in a cycle, and today I'm grieving. And tomorrow I might be hopeful. And the next day I might be grieving. And yeah, it's kind of a ride, isn't it? So let's look at what Jeremiah wrote. We got to know Jeremiah a little bit this past fall, and Lamentations, his other book, is one of the most, I think, raw books in the Bible. It is Jeremiah writing in the aftermath of Jerusalem's destruction. The city has fallen. It's terrible looking. The temple has been burned, and all of the people have been sent out into exile. And there's no triumphant ending in the near future. There's nothing spectacular. There's no real hope to come. It's only rubble, and all he can see is the rubble. And so Lamentations chapter 3 says this. It says, remember my affliction and my wanderings, the wormwood and the gall. Kind of depressing, isn't it? My soul continually remembers it and is bowed down within me. I mean, that's how he starts this section out. And I think, he's not skipping the pain either. He's being real about the pain. He sits in the memory of bitterness. His soul is bowed down. He doesn't manufacture some silver lining, or he doesn't rush to the lesson and all of it, right? Because we want that sometimes. We have despair, and don't you love the people who are around you who remind you? There's more to this. And it's such a truth that we can't neglect and forget. But in the moment, sometimes we just have to say it, name it. And then out of that weight of Jeremiah, not in spite of the weight, by the way, but out of the weight, comes, I think, one of the most important pivot points. This is what it says in verse 21. He says, but this I call to mind. This I call to mind. This I remember. And because of that, I have hope. The steadfast love of the Lord never ceases. Amen. And his mercies never come to an end. Amen. Right? And every morning, these mercies are brand new. Every day. Because he is faithful. Great is his faithfulness. No matter how dark, and no matter how hard, and no matter how overwhelming, and no matter what moment in the cycle we are stuck in or spinning out in, he's great. And as certain as the sun will rise, his mercies are new every single day. And so in the midst of all of the sorrow, what did he have to do? He had to say, I call this to mind. And I think that phrase is everything. Hope here is not a feeling that washed over Jeremiah when the circumstances change, because the circumstances have not changed. Jerusalem is in rubbles and it's in ruins, and the exile is real and the loss is total and complete. So hope here is a choice. It is something Jeremiah reaches for. He wants so desperately. And how does he get there? He remembers. He calls it to mind. It's deliberate and it's intentional in the middle of the pain, in the middle of the ache, because he knows where to reach. He knows where to go. Why does he know this? Because he's been there before. Over and over and over, he's had to go there. He's been in honest conversation with God long enough to know that God's steadfast love is a thing that can be called upon at any moment, especially when it can't be felt. Look at this. Verse 24 then. The Lord is my portion. The Lord is my portion. Not my circumstances, not my pain, not my loss. Not the difficulty that I'm in the middle of. The Lord is my portion, says my soul. Therefore, my hope is where? In him. And the Lord is good to those who wait for him, the soul who seeks him. It is good that one should wait quietly for the salvation of the Lord. The Lord is my portion. The Lord is my portion. Not my portion when things are good. Not my portion when the prayer is answered. He is my portion, the things I have, regardless of what else I have or don't have. He's it. And then it's good to wait. Oh, I don't like that, Jeremiah. I do not like that. He says it's good to wait quietly. It's one thing to wait, but to ask me to wait quietly? How many of us do that really well? He says it's good for the salvation of the Lord. He didn't say, by the way, it's easy. Notice that. He said it's good. There's a difference. And haven't you noticed in life how often something good actually isn't easy? Waiting is hard. Man, waiting is painful. And waiting, however, in God's economy is not wasted. It is the place where something is being formed in us that could not be formed any other way. So what do we do with all of this? What is our practice based on this? I think Jeremiah's move in Lamentations 3 is a move that every single one of us is invited into. And here's the move. This is how I will say it, because it's straight from Lamentations. Yet this I call to mind. Yet this I call to mind. I think this is what it means. I think it means hope is sometimes a choice before it becomes a feeling. Last week we talked about often the heart will follow the body. And so if we will physically try in some physical form to surrender something, often the heart will follow. And so this is what I think we're learning, that hope sometimes is a choice long before we actually feel hopeful. I think that that's what Jeremiah is demonstrating for us, that it's something we reach for before we feel it, and reaching for it even when it feels thin, even when the ache is so strong and so loud, and sometimes stronger and louder than the hope, That's our practice. I think that's what we're after. That's what we're trying to do. And I want to remind you that this series is not a four-week fix. It can't be. This series has been building not a set of tools to deploy in a crisis. That's not what we're trying to do. And if any of us are in a crisis and any of us are searching for the tools, then honestly, we've missed the entire point of this series. This series has been developing us into a posture. It is a way of living before God, and over time, in the ordinary and in the long, unspectacular middle of life, it begins to form us into someone who knows where to go when how long gets too long. And I think some of us think how long has gotten too long. It has for me. I think the worst is when we don't know where to go. When how long wears us down. David got there. Job got there. Habakkuk got there. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they got there. Not because they were extraordinary people with this extraordinary faith. They got there because they practiced, because they showed up in the presence of God every day as often as they could. They brought their real selves and their real stuff, and they named it, and they gave it to God day after day in the moments that nobody else recorded. And when the recorded moments came, when the defining moment arrived, they passed the test because they knew the way. See, part of our problem is we don't know the way into the throne room of grace where we can name it and bring it. Our whole selves, our real selves, the unedited raw side of us. And so our response today is not just about this week's prayer prompts. I've been on my own journey, and I've shared this in this series. One of the things I've started doing is, if Jeremiah did it, if David did it, I thought maybe I should try it. And that's writing some poetry, because you read this middle section of the Bible, do you know how much poetry there is? Because some nights, usually nights, I've got these overwhelming feelings that I just don't know what to do with. And so I just start writing. I thought, if it worked for Jeremiah, maybe it'll work for me. If it worked for David, maybe I should try it. And so I'm going to share just a portion of one in the middle of our circumstances. I had to ask Tucker for permission. We were having a couple of rough Fridays. Actually, the last three Fridays have been rough. Because it's summertime. His friends wish he could go with them where they're going. And he can't go. Man, as a father, you want to talk about Father's Day? If I could trade places with him, I'd do it in a heartbeat. Wouldn't you, with your kids and the pain that they're in? Whew. That didn't come in the kid manual, by the way. So after some tears, some frustration, I had feelings. And I just didn't know what to do. And so I thought, I'm going to go to the throne room of grace. I'm going to take it raw, and I'm going to take it unedited. And so this is the unedited version, and here it is. My son, you used to get around. Free as a bird, now wheelchair bound. You could run and play, choose your path, go or stay. Your friends were tight, floating, boating, laughing in flight, hanging, bawling, racing the sun, camping, fishing, always on the run. Beaching, kicking, diving through waves, living the freedom youth so bravely craves. And now you watch from the sidelines alone, a life once familiar suddenly unknown. It's gone for now. I know you feel alone. You're stuck and confined like a wild bird caged, longing to roam. The world feels unfair, and maybe it is. Some days are heavy with questions and tears. You see your friends chase the life that you miss while you're left battling doubt, pain, and fears. But son, hear this. Your spirit is bigger than what you can do. Your worth isn't measured by races you run, or mountains you climb, or games that you win. It lives in the courage with which you begin. Don't let this defeat you or darken your flame. Let disappointment become your fuel. Let every hard moment strengthen your name, for adversity is life's hardest school. This chapter is painful, but it is not the end. The road has turned sharply, but not vanished from sight. Months from now, maybe years, you'll look back and see the strength you discovered while learning to fight. You're building a life that is special and rare, forged not by ease, but by trials endured. A story of grit, of hope, and of faith, of a young man who suffered but still persevered. So spread your wings, even if they feel broken today. The sky is still there, though hidden from view. Spread your wings, though they're heavy today, and trust what you cannot see. The hardest roads often wind through the dark before they reveal where they're meant to lead. And no accident or setback or season of pain can ever diminish the power you've gained. We cannot yet know where this journey will lead, but I know the strength that is growing in you. And one day you'll look at the life you've built, not wishing this chapter away, but proud of the strength and courage it forged and the man who emerged from the fray. So keep moving forward one step at a time, though doubt through pain, through the unknown, for grit has a way of opening doors that comfort and ease have never shown. Keep faith in the work of each difficult day, in the courage to rise when you fall, for those who keep moving through hardship and doubt often discover they were stronger than most. Listen, I don't share that with you because I'm becoming a great poet, because listen, it's not that good. Some of the stuff I've written, I'm like, whew. I'm sharing this because, like you, grief is a cycle. Pain is a cycle. And like you, I have to put it out there, and I have to be able to go into the presence of God in the throne room that's called grace. And I name it, and I share it, and I give it, and I pour it out. And if you've gained anything out of this series, that's my encouragement to you. The invitation to enter into the throne room of grace, it keeps going, and the door is always open. We are invited to keep bringing the honest, the unedited, the unpolished version of our lives to God, not just the weight and the unbearable every day, but in the car on our way to work, in the quiet before the house wakes up, in the small moments that nobody sees and nobody records. And so this is where practice is built, and the practice is what makes the difference when the how long seems to stretch on longer and longer than we expected. So let me ask you, what is the how long you've been carrying? Can you name it? What is your how long? Can you name it? And not the cleaned up version, by the way. The real one, the one that has been with you so long that you've almost expected never for it to change. Can you name it? And we don't rush into it, but we give weight that it deserves. And so here are the prayer prompts today. God, how long will this blank? How long will it continue? How long? And maybe this, God, I'm so tired of carrying blank. Can you name what you've been carrying? With this, let me ask, what's the one thing that you can call to mind today about God? That even in the midst of answering these two questions, God, you are still. God, you are still faithful. And every morning, as certain as the sun will rise, I know your mercies are new for me every day. Because you are great and you are faithfulness. And what can you call to mind that you remember about God that remains true regardless of the circumstances that we're in? And can you today reach for that and find some hope. I think we started 4 weeks ago by asking whether God can handle our honesty. And the answer from the beginning has been absolutely, God can handle it. God kept David's complaints in the Bible. If God didn't like that, he wouldn't have included them. And you remember, he grumbled a lot. He called Job the truthful, faithful one. He met Habakkuk at the watchtower, and he walked into the fire with three men, and he has not changed. He has not changed. Lament is a long road. Happy Father's Day, by the way. Hope doesn't always come quickly. It just doesn't. The how long sometimes stretches longer and longer than we think and can bear. And the psalmist and Jeremiah both show us that waiting and worship can exist at the same time in the exact same space, and it's beautiful. They show us that sorrow and steadfast love can exist in the same breath, that we can be buried down within and still call something that's true about God to mind. God's faithfulness, it is not canceled by sorrow. Please hear that. It is not contingent. God's faithfulness is not contingent on our circumstances. God's faithfulness is not waiting for us to feel better before it becomes a reality for us. It's new every morning, including today, including the hard days, including the days where all we can do is reach for it and trust that it's there. Lament is not the opposite of hope. Lament is the path toward hope. And so listen, keep praying, keep showing up, keep naming it, keep bringing it to God, keep bringing the real thing to Him, because that's what they all did. That's what the greats did. And it's what held them. And if you are still questioning that God's throne room is a throne room filled with grace, then this is the perfect time for you to remember. Every week at Mountain View, we pause and we share in communion. We break the bread. We drink the cup. If you're questioning whether His throne room is a room filled with grace or not, then we go back to look at the cross, where His body was broken and His blood was poured out. I don't know of a greater act in the span of humanity. I don't know of a greater act of love than this. And the scriptures teach us that when Jesus ascended into heaven, He sits at the right hand of God in the throne room of grace. It's real. So eat the bread and drink the juice today, and remember that you have access to God and His awesome grace in the throne room of grace. And then there are some pieces of paper. And using today's prayer prompts, I would invite you again, name it, write it down, bring it down here, lay it right here. Why? Because our heart often follows what our body does. Writing it down, your heart will follow. Bringing it down, laying it down, your heart will follow. You're free to go. Thank you.
we're going to continue on in our time of response. If you haven't taken communion and you'd like to take communion, you can head to the tables. If you haven't picked up your paper to write out your honest prayer to God today, I encourage you to grab it. And over the next few minutes, these last two songs, you have the opportunity to come and lay it at the foot of the stage. And if you need prayer, Tom is up here. We have elders around the room who are happy to pray with you and pray for you and to encourage you. And I feel like I just want to share what I wrote down, because I feel like you've been on this journey of depression with me for a while, and I've talked to you about it multiple times. Sorry, I gotta... So I wrote, God, how long will this depression last? How long will it continue? Because I'm tired of carrying the pain. I'm tired of carrying the trauma and the shame and the guilt. And at the end of the day, I know that God is still a healer and that I can bring these honest prayers to him, and that even if it hasn't happened yet, that he will turn this around. And so we're going to sing these songs. And I'm going to ask you to stand and we'll respond together.
Maybe this is just too honest. God, I'm bringing it to you. I've been lost in the silence. God, where are you? When my prayers feel unanswered, when I thought that you would move, here in the waiting, will I worship you? Even in the darkest valley, and I'll command my soul to remember who you are. And even here I will worship, even here I will praise, even here in the silence, you're not turning away. And even here when I am hurting, even here when answers fade, in the quiet, in the grieving, I will trust the God who stays. If all I have is broken prayer, then I will bring it all to you, 'cause you are God, and you're still good. Trust that you're still good, and you have never failed me. Your promise is secure, in you my hope is anchored, and I know that you're still good. So even in the darkest valley, and I'll command my soul to remember who you are, and even here in the silence, you're not turning away. And even here when I am hurting, even here when answers fade, in the quiet, in the grieving, I will trust the God who stays. If all I have is broken prayer, then I will bring it all to you, 'cause you are God, and you're still good. And you are with me in the valley. You are constant in the pain. And you understand my heart cry when silence is all I bring. And you are worthy of my worship in the famine and the rain. And while I can't understand it, I'll command my soul to sing that you are God. You're still good. So even here I will worship, even here I will praise, even here in the silence, you're not turning away. And even here when I am hurting, even here when answers fade, in the quiet, in the grieving,
I will trust the God who stays. If all I have is broken prayer, then I will bring it all to you, cause you are God, and you're still good. Yes, you are God, and you're still good. You are God, and you're still good.
Nothing else will do. I just want.
Take a moment and complete that song with a quiet prayer. God, as we come to the end of this series, it's been good and hard. God, there is not enough days that this is the place that we come to, that we just want you. And God, I just pray that our time spent in the lament brings us to a practice of wanting you more than we want to fix it, more than we want anything else than just to be in your presence, even in the midst. And help us to wait patiently as you are patient with us. And God, when the answers come, that it would be very clear. And that we could give joy and thanks and appreciation for the answers you bring. Thank you for Jesus and his hope. Amen. Man, just before we go, we mentioned it earlier, but we've had a prayer room in the fireside room. It's Monday through Thursday, 8 to 8. And there's four stations in there. Just to walk you through kind of this lament cycle. And it might take you 10 minutes, it might take you half an hour, that's okay. But we'd encourage you to stop by if you haven't done so. And then we will shift focus, and the prayer room will be available the rest of the summer, but it'll have some different things other than the lament. So swing by, spend some time, and see what might happen as you share that time with God. And then just before we go, we got just a quick little thanks from the kids. So if you want to sit down just for a few moments, we're gonna say Happy Father's Day from the folks from downstairs.
I love you, Dad. Happy Father's Day.
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 Happy Father's Day. Thanks. You're dismissed.